Welcome, everyone, to episode 470 of the NBA podcast. We are so close to the start of the 2021-22 regular season. We have almost made it, folks, and we have knocked out our division previews, our awards predictions, our league pass rankings. So today we are going to give you the rest of our season predictions, how we see the playoffs shaking out, who's going to be in the conference finals, who's going to be in the finals, who's going to win this year's title, and some hot takes sprinkled in throughout. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone who is apparently putting way too much stock into the preseason, Morton Supreme Bay Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well. I am not. I am just finding it interesting that the Bulls finished number one in defense in the preseason compared to people who are saying that they should finish 30th in the regular season. And like, yeah, that they aren't projected to finish number one. They aren't projected to finish maybe in the league top 10 or anything like that. But I'm just saying that the arguments against the Bulls seem to come with an expiration date.
I guess we'll see. I'm going to wait to crown anyone.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not crowning anyone. By the way, this kind of episode that we're doing, like a predictions pod, that is just us asking to get ridiculed in like 5 months, by the way.
Of course. No one's going to get these 100% right. Or if you do, I hope you bet on every single thing that you're saying, because you should at least make money off of your future telling. So we are very much aware that a lot of these are going to end up being wrong. I mean,
yeah.
Injuries, trades, unexpected breakouts, like hell, I mean, the Pelicans just hid New Orleans or Zion Williamson's broken foot for 3 months. Like, God forbid, we don't know when he's coming back now, which adds some uncertainty. There will be other messy situations throughout. Lord knows we have two in the East right now that have no resolution in sight. So a lot will change over this season, but this is just a snapshot of what we think is going to happen heading into this season. And I think it's we'll revisit these predictions, I'm sure, at some point throughout the season to see how wrong we were.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to at least set a baseline of expectations that we can then revisit throughout the season and see how teams are measuring up or falling short of what we thought they would be in the preseason. So with all of that said, Mort, let's start in the West.
Yeah.
Who do you have as your 8 playoff teams and in what order?
Yeah. And so we're not really taking into account play-in here. We're going with the old traditional format, but that might be wrong because the play-in does exist. So maybe we should have, but it's just going to be 8. And I'm going to go Memphis. I think they are right there. The West, I don't consider particularly strong, to be honest with you. Jaren Jackson Jr. has looked great in a couple of games
really
in the
preseason.
Yeah. So, and here's the thing, the major question for me is health. Like, if Jaren is going to miss significant time again, that's probably all she wrote for the playoff chances. But I'm going to be optimistic, Brian. I'm going to say this is the year that he's going to stay healthy. This is the year that his body is aligned to a long season where everything kind of works out. And I think with the presence of him, going into his fourth year, Ja going into his third, having a lot of reliable role players alongside them, I could see it. I think this is the year they make the playoffs, or at least makes the 8th seed, and then we'll see what happens with the play-in tournament.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I had them on my bubble. I had to put them somewhere, it would probably be 9th or 10th, so I agree with you that they are a clear play-in tournament team in some order, and it scares me to bet against them in the play-in tournament, seeing what we saw from Ja Morant in particular last year. So again, this one's going to come down to health more than anything. Like, the two biggest or three biggest wild cards in the West, I guess, are the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Warriors. Like, we know that Klay Thompson is going to come back at some point this season. Sounds like it'll be in January. What does he look like when he's back? But, the Warriors have enough other talent that I think they'll be safe either way. The Nuggets with Jamal Murray, I would assume he will be back at some point. We don't know when. We don't know.
Right.
Is he going to be on a minutes restriction? And then obviously the Clippers with Kawhi. So depending on how those three shake out, and like if Jamal Murray doesn't come back this year, I'm going to be lower on the Nuggets than I am right now. Or if Kawhi doesn't play at all this season, then, you know, when they get to the play-in tournament, I'm going to have less faith that right. they're going to advance past, knock on wood, a fully healthy Memphis team.
Which is why I have the Clippers outside the playoff picture, because I'm working under the assumption that Kawhi does not return.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard nothing about what his expected timetable is. You would think the Clippers are going to play it extremely safe with him.
Yeah.
I wonder, the fact it was only a partially torn ACL instead of fully torn, if that reduces the expected recovery time.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that I want to be wrong about.
Right. Yeah. No, I do. I would love to be wrong as well. I have them as my eighth seed under the assumption that he is back by then.
Okay.
But if he is not, I would probably go Memphis as well.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. If he's not back and Paul George like picks up a nagging injury and is out for like 3 weeks, I mean, they're dead.
You don't have faith in Eric Bledsoe to keep them afloat?
I really don't, Ryan.
I don't blame you. Yeah. Yeah, they have a lot riding on the health of Paul George, who has picked up some bumps and bruises along the way over the last couple of years. So
right, and he's also in his 30s now, if memory serves. So that's a lot of workload, you know, coming in as the number one guy, not necessarily having a ton of weapons alongside him. I mean, an 82-game schedule, that's harsh.
Here's the one question I want to ask about Memphis. You know, I agree. Jaren Jackson will look great in preseason, and I hope he stays healthy throughout. Are you concerned at all about going from Valanciunas to Steven Adams?
Yeah, of course. I am. I think it's a downgrade. That said, I don't think it outweighs the development and improvements from Jaren and Ja, and as well as like Brandon Clark, for example, and Desmond Bain and Xavier Tillman. I mean, I think the collective improvements of those players outweigh the downgrade from Valanciunas to Steven Adams. And also, I think not having a guy who takes up shots could also be a good thing to some extent for these young players. That's not to say I would want this version without a Valanciunas. I always prefer Valanciunas instead. But now that you're kind of forced to spread out the shot amounts to John Jaren instead, which was always one of those things last year where you kind of went, why isn't Ja up in the 23, 24 point area every single game? He probably should be. So now I think Memphis has basically said, you know, we're not going to run the ball through Steven Adams, obviously. So that the shot amounts are going to come from elsewhere. It's going to be Ja, it's going to be Jaren, it's going to be Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane, all those guys, right?
Yeah. And Dylan Brooks is hurt. He has a hand injury.
Yeah. So. It's when he gets back. Yeah.
But that, I mean, Dylan Brooks is really good. I don't want to take this away from him, but low efficiency. I mean, you know, he's been low 40s each of the last 3 years. So, you know, his absence, they're going to miss him defensively in particular, but, you know, reallocating his shots to even more of his shots to Ja and Jaren early on. Like I am all in on a Jaren Jackson breakout year. I just got him in a fantasy basketball draft last night. I probably spent way too much money on him, but I was like, that, you know, if this guy stays healthy, he's going to have top 30 upside. I mean, he's just like the forgotten unicorn at this point because he just missed so much time last year. But the 3-point shooting and the shot blocking, it's like, this is what we wanted Kristaps to be. Early days Kristaps, next Kristaps.
I still prefer my unicorns to be able to rebound, though.
Well, I was going to say he's actually been a little bit better in that regard in the preseason.
He has, and not having Valanciunas there as well is also going to give him a larger responsibility. It's funny, like, I wouldn't put Valanciunas in there as someone who was hindering the development of others. I just, I don't think that's fair. I think when you're a good player who's, you know, elite in certain areas, you should be used in that regard. But I can see a world wherein the lack of presence of Valanciunas does somewhat accelerate the development of the other ones, simply because, you know, you don't have a guy who can come out and average 16 and 12 in 28 minutes.
Right, right. All right, so let's go to your seventh seed in the West.
I have the Portland Trail Blazers, and I don't feel great about it.
In terms, are you too high on them or too low on them?
You know, I think it might be a little bit too high.
No.
Here's the thing. It's the Dame factor that kept me in it. Like, Dame is so good that he'll be there. But I think this is the year where Dame is kind of like, if we come out slow, like, what am I going to do? Am I going to be emotionally invested? And that's not to question Dame's loyalty. That's not to question his tenacity, his dedication. Not at all. But he came into the offseason with great expectations of improvement from within. And the biggest offseason acquisition they made, although we both like getting Larry Nance Jr. onto that team, but that probably shouldn't have been the biggest move of the summer, you know? That shouldn't have been the biggest upgrade. So I could see Dame kind of like, if they come out and are like, I don't know, 5-10 over the first 15, he'd be a little bit less inclined to just go ham on the rest of the season. We'll see. I think this is a team that can swing in both ways. Maybe Larry Nance Jr. completely unlocks something and they come out and they're 10-5 instead. The spectrum is just so large for where they could land.
Yeah. No, I'm right with you. I have them higher than this, but Jason Quick of The Athletic put out a story, I believe it was yesterday. the title or the headline is Chauncey Billups and Changing the Blazers. Quote, "We all have to have a level of patience." So I sent you these on my picks on Friday night, and then this story came out yesterday. I'm like, I might need to move the Blazers down a spot or two. The TLDR is that they are basically changing their defensive scheme. They're not playing as much drop. They're sending the big out more to the perimeter. And they're saying, we just kind of have to stick with it. We tried it last year. It didn't work. And we went right back to our old scheme. And we were terrible defensively. So we're going to keep doing this. But if you have one breakdown, you're just dead in the water. Yeah. So, you know, they've had a couple of those in the preseason. And, like, there's a quote from Billups that was like, I would say we had some good moments, but we had some moments that it was like, quote, dang, we are a lot further away than I thought, you know? And it's just, that is not what you want to hear going into this pivotal season where Dame has already been frustrated and was weighing his future. So I think it is fair to wonder, you know, what the season-long trajectory of the Blazers is. Right. If they do get off to a slow start, I think I looked this up. It was like 11 of their first 19 or 20 games come against teams that made the playoffs last year. So it's like a decently hard schedule to start, which sets the stage for a potentially slow start. It's fair to wonder, like, do these questions start to bubble up again, especially in mid-December when all these free agents are eligible to be traded? Like, what if the Blazers get off to a bad start and the Knicks get off to a good start? Does he start eyeing his way to Madison Square Garden? So I think it's a fair way to hedge against that uncertainty for sure. I ended up putting Dallas as my seventh seed. And this is, we've talked about it all off season. You were weighing like Luka and his incredible talent in one hand, and Jason Kidd and all of his Jason Kiddness in the other hand. And, you know, the quote came out from him during the preseason about how, like, he just doesn't want to attempt a lot of three-pointers and wants to run more. Like, if you rely on the jump shot goes away. You have nothing left. So they, in terms of three-point volume, he was not kidding. They are not taking a ton in the preseason. And that has me very nervous, because why do you invest in someone like Reggie Bullock as your main offseason free agent addition if you are not going to attempt a lot of threes? So,
yeah, of course, Ace and Kidd would say all that.
Right. So I like, if they really are serious about running more Kristaps post-ups instead of three-pointers from Tim Hardaway Jr. and Luka and Reggie Bullock, then I don't know. I am nervous about this team this year.
Yeah. And that's why I had them at sixth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, let me see. They are, I mean, it's, again, it's the, you know, the preseason. So you can only read so much into this, but I just hope he's not, or I hope he sees the light like 20 games into the season. I'll say that much.
I hope the Dallas's front office sees the light 20 games into the season.
There you go. All right. So you had, Dallas sixth. I have Denver sixth. And again, this is just, I don't know when Jamal Murray's coming back. If you tell me he's back in January, they're up at four for me, probably.
Yeah. And I had them three because I expect both him to be back. And I also expect, you know, Michael Porter Jr. to come out blazing. And I expect Aaron Gordon to come in and have a little bit of a larger offensive impact. Right off the bat, because last year after he got acquired, he was more or less exclusively playing off a ball handler. So I think he'll have a little bit more to say there. No, but I'm getting ahead of myself because we'll get back to him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they have Monte Morris, who is going to be a pretty good fill-in for Jamal Murray. I mean, ball security is certainly one of his strong points.
Oh, yeah. How many zero turnover games is he going to have over the course of 82 games?
Yeah, probably like 50.
Right?
Knowing him, yeah. So I might be too low on the Nuggets. It's really just the uncertainty with Murray. But like, it would not surprise me if they finish. Three might be a little high for me, but I could definitely see four or five. It's just,
well, I'm baking in improvements from Nikola Jokic.
That's fair. And believe me, I'm all in. Michael Porter Jr. is also on the fantasy team that I drafted last night with Jaren Jackson Jr. So I just went with like young guys who I want to see break out. So I also have like Nikhil Alexander Walker, Darius Garland. Just like,
oh, nice.
Guys I'm excited. Yeah. It's going to be, it's either going to fall flat on its face or it's going to be really good.
Be ready for the NBA podcast spinoff, NBA Fantasy, hosted by Brian Tabor. You really should, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. That, unfortunately, that industry has not taken off like fantasy football for whatever reason. All right. Number five for you is spicy. I thought this was going to be one of my hot takes, but you're just going guns blazing. So
no, I mean, okay, I have the Lakers at five. I realize and I recognize that they could end a lot higher than that. But I'm going to need to see more. I mean, it was an 0-6 preseason, and it didn't look good. I understand that the Stars didn't play a whole lot together, but even when they did, I wasn't really all that overwhelmed. Like, I think there are some major issues there. The age factor, just in terms of longevity, the long season of 82 games, like nagging injuries. And look, this is all about record. This isn't to speak of their overall talent level, how they can compete in the playoffs. It's got nothing to do with that. It's all about regular season wins and losses. And I could just see them ending up sacrificing quite a few regular season games by saving guys because they all need oxygen tanks and they all need to like have a nice stroll by the lakes to feed ducks or something like that because they need that.
I mean, they're already dealing with injuries. Ariza is out for 8 weeks, I think. And then Talen Horton-Tucker just had surgery as well. Yeah. I don't think we've heard a timetable for him. But that, I mean, that's one of their three young guys on the roster is already hurt. So, you know, Anthony Davis is almost certain to miss 10 to 15 games with assorted bumps and bruises. Like, LeBron has now had two of the last three seasons where he's had major injuries, which you just never had before.
Right. And to add to your point to that, LeBron apparently once again is trying to make it a mission to play all 82.
Oh boy. Well, he is also on my fantasy team. So yeah. I am in full support of that. Hashtag Washed King. I was trying to break the Washed King narrative.
No, but I mean, that's problematic to me. I mean,
yeah.
if you're going as far as maybe ignoring some pain somewhere in your body and you're going, no, I'm going to play 82 and something suddenly pops.
Yeah.
I just hope that he has a come to Jesus moment and says, you know what? This is year 19. Let me at least take, let's miss one game representing each year. Let me miss 19 games over the course of the year. I'm fine. I'll work it out.
I mean, that's the point of acquiring Russell Westbrook too, right? Like you acquire a guy like him to give you that insurance if you do end up missing time, so your offense doesn't go to die without you on the floor.
Right.
I mean, the questions are still how these three guys fit together. Like Russ looked pretty rough in the preseason. And I think a lot of the concerns about this Lakers team have been bearing out so far. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about concerning quotes, like a lot of the quotes out of the Lakers right now are just like, we're a work in progress and it's going to take time. And that's not what you want to hear out of the team with the best title odds in the West right now.
So, time is the one thing that this team does not have.
Right. Well, that's because Father Time is running out.
Correct. It was a double tantra. So that's why. I mean, people would probably come at me, especially Lakers fans, for having them fifth. But I don't think it's all that unrealistic, Bri.
I don't either. I mean, you know, both of us are lower on them than consensus, and it could look really dumb. We are fully aware of that, but I can't see. I mean, I have them third, full disclosure. So, you know, it's not like I'm not fifth, but I just don't see a case for them over Utah or Phoenix right now.
Right. Those are the two that I think are surefire. And again, I could be wrong easily and the Lakers could have a great regular season. I think when you have so many veterans of that age, I mean, what was it? I had the stat up recently. I think it was 8 guys with 12 or more years of experience.
Oof.
Like, I just think that when you reach that level, the regular season just has less importance overall. Yeah. Like, you're going to need to rest guys. You're basically circling some sort of calendar losses here and there and just going with the playoffs. Because I don't necessarily think they'll be a bad playoff team. Like, I don't have them in the Western Conference Finals, but I could see them make it to the second round, which would be fine. That won't necessarily reflect a fifth seat finish. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't think they're the clear-cut number one team as many people paint them as. I think that's just like LeBron bias or whatever it is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think it's perfectly reasonable to have them outside the top one at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, we just don't like Anthony Davis. Throughout the preseason, he said, like, I'm going to play center. And now it's like they're talking about starting DeAndre Jordan at center. Which, I get it. Because you don't want Anthony Davis to play center full time to reduce the wear and tear on his body. You want to preserve him for the playoffs. Like, I'm sure once the playoffs begin, then we really are going to see Anthony Davis full time starting center. So, like, this is a team that I think their playoff upside is going to be higher than their regular season upside.
Yeah, yeah, like completely agree.
If you are starting, you know, LeBron, AD, DeAndre Jordan, and Russ, like, I mean, what is the three-point field goal percentage, the expected three-point field goal percentage of that starting lineup? I don't care who you put in. Wayne Ellington, fine. Like, you're going to have one above average shooter on the floor. Like every team can just go pack the paint, and that's, you're going to dare Russ to shoot. You're going to, hell, you'll dare LeBron to shoot. I mean, that's the best way. You know, if you have to live with something, you'd rather live with him shooting versus him getting a full head of steam. And they're, you know, that by starting DeAndre Jordan, they're kind of leaning right into that for opponents. So I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating team to watch. I'll say that much.
Can we come, you know, can we bring hot takes as we move forward, or do we have like a segment call hot takes for later?
You can bring them whenever you want.
Okay. I absolutely agree with what you said. And that is why I think Malik Monk's health is more important than that of Russell Westbrook's.
Ooh. That's interesting.
No, but think about it. It's a young guy who presumably he's being brought in to shoot and to be like a youthful presence because he's athletic. Like, he's a guy they expect to kind of just take a lot of those minutes from the vets if they don't if they can't play a certain night, or if like H is coming and knocking on their doors. Like it's Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn, right? Mm-hmm. Malik, I think, is such a good shooter, and I think he's so athletic that he can sort of fit into every type of lineup with that team. Like you don't even need to have him be a traditional point guard if he plays minutes with LeBron, for example. Then LeBron is the de facto point guard, the playmaker, and yeah. Malik has sort of run off of that. But if Malik like has a significant injury where he misses time, how the hell do you replace that? Okay, you could extend the minutes of Kendrick Nunn, but he's not as, what's the word I'm looking for? Explosive. Like, he's not a guy who will go off in the same way. So offensively, I think Monk is going to be so much more important than most people actually anticipate. And the reason I mentioned Russ specifically in contrast to that is because you have LeBron. Like, right, Russ right, is just right, more right. of the same. Like, if LeBron is healthy, you don't really, in practice, need Russell Westbrook. You need shooters alongside him. So that's why I think Malik Monk is a huge X factor this year. If he goes down, they're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, their spacing will be even more horrendous than it already projects to be.
That absolutely.
Is, yeah, that's fair. I mean,
it's so wrap Malik Monk in damn bubble wrap immediately.
I mean, yeah, it's him and Wayne Ellington are the only two guys who I would consider plus shooters. I mean, yeah. I know, you know, Nunn shot 38.1 from three last year. But I don't necessarily think of him as, I mean, also it's, you know, he's young enough that we can't be sure it's going to last. Like, yeah.
I hear what you're saying. Nunn's release as well is like, I think we've seen so much of Nunn have very different results. Like even if he is hitting like 38%, you're seeing the shots that he does take, which are just nowhere near close. Like when they hit the front of the rim and like, or completely sideways. Like again, speaking of that large spectrum, like where you can go either way, Nunn is right there in terms of shooting because he's like, there isn't that level of consistency there. So I get it. Like I'll always lean back to the percentages and say, okay, I trust it overall, but I could definitely see a swing there because you need spacing. You just do. And if he can't provide it on a night-to-night basis, you're screwed.
So I originally had Golden State 5, Portland 4, but after reading those Chauncey the comments, I'm going to flip them. So I have Portland 5, you have Lakers 5, and that means we both have the Warriors at number 4 in the West. Right. And that is – I mean, it sounds like Klay doesn't make his debut until January.
Yeah.
The Warriors last year – finished 8th, 9th?
Oh, eighth, right? Good question, Brian.
Yeah, they finished 8th and they lost to the Grizz in the play-in tournament. Okay. So what makes you think they're going to be better this year, even without Klay?
Well, it's not just the Klay factor. It's also the Jordan Poole, right? Jordan Poole looks a lot better. I think he could come in and start right off the bat. And Steph is Steph. Steph is that one guy I just trust. I also think it's worth noting that they have a lot of young guys who are getting that little bit older. I mean, James Wiseman is going into year two. I understand there are questions. I understand that you know, he also won't play all 82 and all that. But listen. You have to expect a certain level of improvement going from year one to year two. I don't think he's going to regress. So I'm baking that in. Also, when Klay does return, I think they could go completely nuclear, which is why, and again, I'm coming in with a hot take. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to actually end up first in the West. If they can keep, you know, a certain level of dominance, not like a Shaquille O'Neal level of dominance, but like if they, for the first half of the year, can, you know, play not just 500, but like 5,500 basketball. Mm-hmm. And then Klay comes back and they just go completely ham on everyone. I wouldn't be shocked to see them land at number one. That's not something that I expect. It's just not something that I want to rule out. So it's not a hot take in the sense that I believe it'll happen necessarily. I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. But overall, I like the roster. And here's, this might actually be a hot take. I think despite everything, all the Andrew Wiggins drama, I think he might have a career year. Not saying he'll be an all-star, but I think he's entering that combination of physical prime and mental prime where he puts more things together.
Yeah, I mean, one of my hot takes was I think they could finish as a top three seed in the West, which means one of Utah, Phoenix, or the Lakers would not. Right. So I'm with you. I think it's fair to be bullish on this team. Steph was still playing at an MVP level last year. Draymond looked motivated again. I'm sure he will be even more so this year. You get Iggy back as well. Bielitsa off the bench. And Otto Porter, I think, is going to go down as one of these guys who didn't get a ton of buzz during the offseason, considering like all of, you know, every single veteran went to the Nets or the Lakers. But it wouldn't surprise me if he's one of the most impactful minimum signings of any team this offseason.
You mean in the 20 games that he'll play?
He says he's in shape now. We'll see.
I'm kidding. I'm hoping for the best for Otto. I really am. I'm just kidding. I had to get that one in there. I agree with you. And by the way, Bielitsa, when he was signed, I said, this is going to be huge. Everyone was like, it's fine, I guess. He's good. He is really good. Like Draymond as well was like, oh, he's doing things that I haven't seen. Like he was pointing out that like the playmaking stuff and all that. But we've seen it. We've seen that in Sacramento. He's more than just a stretch guy. Like he came into the NBA and was labeled a stretch guy, but he can do so much with the basketball. And in Golden State system specifically, they allow you to do these type of things. Like Steve Kerr is going to go, hey, Nemanja, you know what? You're actually, we're going to use you in the half court as a ball handler. Like he's going to give him that option. So I agree. I think Nemanja Bjelica and Otto Porter, especially if both are healthy, could be huge. And more importantly, and I keep banging this drum, Brian, I think if those two are reliable and productive, that also makes it a little bit more easy for Golden State to ship off their young guys in a major trade if something, you know, kind of falls into their lap. Like if things just go absolutely haywire in Minnesota, and Towns is somehow, some way available, and you can send James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, Jordan Poole, whoever, I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Poole alone is going to have significantly more trade value this year than he did just 6 months ago as well.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, he looks really good and they've been talking him up all offseason. He's under contract for two more years.
Yeah, he was drafted 28th and he just finished his second year, so he's got two more.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we've already revealed our top three to some extent. You had Denver third, I had Lakers third, and then we both have Utah, Phoenix one and two, respectively. Why Utah at the top?
I think they're the best team in the Western Conference. Long story short. And I think people are sleeping on their depth. I understand that people are looking at, you know, the Rudy Gay acquisition going, oh, wow, a 35-year-old, how is that going to help them? I don't think it's that big of an issue because he's not going to come in and play starters minutes. Like he's going to be someone who off the bench plays like what, 15, 17 minutes per game, which is a little bit better. At the same time, they got Hassan Whiteside as a backup center. And I know that he's been mocked everywhere, but I still think there's a player in there just in terms of the production and the skill level. I understand that he's not someone who, you know, is an all-star caliber player who should start all 82 games and all that. But this dude coming off the bench is still someone who can put up a double-double in 20 minutes and give you two blocks. I mean, he led the league in blocks 2 years ago with Portland. Mm-hmm. And elite rebounder, someone who can finish on high percentages. Like, just work within a scheme, it'll be fine. And then you still have Joe Ingles presumably coming off the bench unless he starts instead of Royce O'Neal, in which case Royce O'Neal would come off the bench, who's a good player. Like I think there's so much to like here. I really struggle to see how this team could fail. I mean, in terms of the regular season, they have so many weapons at their disposal.
Yeah, I would guess the one potential hiccup is if Mike Conley goes down with a long-term thing.
Yes, backup point guard isn't great. However, I assume that Mitchell would take on that spot instead, right, and then Jordan Clarkson will kind of move up into the off guard spot instead, which, mm-hmm, you know, you can kind of live with that, and then you can extend Joe Ingles' minutes a little bit more so he acts, yeah, more as a playmaker. So I get what you're saying. I agree with you, but I do think that they are somewhat prepared for that to happen, like if that should happen.
Yeah, no, I'm with. I mean, hell, I've got him number one in the West as well, yeah, for all the reasons you said. And that's no disrespect to Phoenix too, whose depth I also like a lot and whose top, yeah, end talent I like a lot. I slightly worry if they don't reach extensions. We're recording this on Sunday, so by the time you listen to this, this might be a moot point. But the extension deadline for Ayton and Mikal Bridges is tomorrow. They haven't, mm-hmm, reached deals with either of those guys yet, from what I've seen.
Let me guess, Brian, in about 2 hours after we record, Vogue, yeah, and Shams are both
going to... I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, they should pay both of these guys, but, you know, yeah, like, I don't think it's in either one of their personalities to, like, start stat hunting and, like, you know...
Agreed.
Going individual over team, especially after the run they had last year, but... No, it's always a concern that you are playing with two guys who think they deserve to get paid and didn't,
right,
get paid yet. Whereas Utah, I mean, both of these teams, I think that one of the biggest selling points is just consistency. And, you know, you're effectively just running it back with, you know, slight additions on the margins. But, like, you don't have to teach guys an entirely new scheme. You know, these guys are familiar with one another. They have chemistry with one another. Like, for Phoenix, the growing pains between Chris Paul and Devin Booker that we saw early last year, those are ancient history now. You know, they figured out in the playoffs how to really get Ayton involved as well. Yeah. So whereas the Lakers have, you know, a brand new team that they need to integrate all these new pieces, figure out how to play off Russ. You know, Utah and Phoenix should, there's no reason that they shouldn't hit the ground running.
Right. Which is exactly why I think we have them 1-2. I mean, they yeah, are well-oiled machines at this point.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to the East, Mort. And I like the way you broke this down. You had two separate seedings for if Ben Simmons does play for the Sixers and if he doesn't play for the Sixers, which, again, this is one of the big mysteries right now. He is reported to the team, but we still don't know what that means, if he's going to suit up for them, right, or if he's just there not to get fined. So that doesn't affect your seedings toward the bottom of the East, but it's something to consider later on. So who do you have as your 8th seed in the East?
I don't feel great about this. I have Boston at 8th, and okay, I think they have a chance to move up into the top 5 if they hit on all cylinders. And I, you know, honestly, it's not because I'm down on Boston. I'm just so high on the East. I think the Eastern Conference right now is loaded. So Boston fans, come at me. I mean, it's fine. You can. I invite you, because I still love this team. I just don't think I look at the rest of the East that they are necessarily better than a whole lot of others. I think the two J's is really going to be the key to all this. Mm-hmm. Like, how far they go is how far Boston goes. And I realize that people are going to point out, well, the development of Aaron Nesmith and Robert Williams and Peyton Richard, which totally, I hear you. I love all those three guys. There's Dennis Schroeder coming off the bench. But I do think there is a level of inexperience around the fringes on that roster where I could see them going through a little bit of a growing pains era period. We'll see. I'm still high on them, but I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, we have some moments where Peyton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith and Robert Williams might not be performing to the point where you're calling them a championship contender, for example.
Right. Yeah, I'll say this about the East. Whereas the West, especially if you extend it out to the play-in tournament, like, it's almost hard to find that 10th team, especially with Zion's uncertainty now. It's like, right, hard to talk yourself into... Like, well, I guess Minnesota could finish 10th, or like Sacramento could finish 10th. Whereas in the East, it's like I can easily talk myself into 12 teams making the play-in yeah, tournament. And hell, like, even throw Cleveland into the mix. I don't think they get there, but
I okay, can, we differ on that one, but okay, yeah.
You wouldn't put Cleveland even remotely close?
I would not, Brian. They're going to start Lauri Markkanen at the three, apparently.
Yeah, that's true. I know. Assuming rational coaching at some point.
Yeah. Oh, well, that would be better. Like, yeah. By the way, does that hope? I really hope they're not benching Isaac Okoro.
I don't know, man. We were confused by the signing, and I only get more confused. Like, I figured Mobley would just get start on the bench to start the
right
year, because Lauri Markkanen in no way, shape, and form is a three.
Right.
But
and in no way, shape, or form should Isaac Okoro come off the bench.
Right. Yeah, like at some point you need to play defense.
Right. Maybe. Okay. I don't know, man. We'll figure that out when the season starts. But regardless, no, I'm not putting them into that category. But I agree with you. There are definitely 12 teams that all could make the playoffs here.
Yeah, like both of us do not have Washington, Indiana, Charlotte, and Toronto.
Right, and all of them, all of them could make a run.
Hell yeah! Like, the Raptors look—they're going to be frisky at least. Like, yeah. Charlotte, I think, is a big wild card in that range. Especially, you know, we'll see year two LaMelo. I expect to take a big leap.
Yeah,
you know, Indiana. I think if they were fully healthy, I probably would have them in my top eight. But you know, we're already down T.J. Warren and Caris LeVert. And Malcolm Brogdon has a minor shoulder injury already. Mm. So it's just like, I don't know what curse this team has on it, but I just don't think we're going to see
right.
a fully healthy Pacers team this year. And then the Wizards, like we've talked about it, they're just,
they have 37 million power forwards.
Right. They're just so imbalanced that it's hard for me to take them over one of these other teams without seeing how that rotation really starts to shake out.
Yeah.
But I mean, they made they were the eighth seed last year, so it wouldn't totally shock me if they made one of the teams that we're putting in our top eight will be undone by something, whether it's injuries or just like, you know, Philly with the dumb Ben Simmons stuff, or God forbid Brooklyn with the dumb Kyrie stuff. Like,
or the Knicks.
But with Kemba's knees imploding.
Kemba's knees, one thing, but also, you know, some players might get tired of Tips's mentality of, hey, we got to go win this Cleveland game, and I don't care if I play each and every one of you 48 minutes.
Right.
Maybe at some point that bubble bursts. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Okay. So you had Boston at eight. I had Chicago at eight. I'm sorry.
No reason to be sorry. It's fair.
You know, it's just, especially, I feel like there are pretty clear tiers in the East. Like, Milwaukee and Brooklyn are very clearly at the top.
Yeah.
Atlanta, Miami, and then Philly, depending on the Ben Simmons stuff, I think are, you know, should be top six if healthy. And then, again, like 6 through 12, you could tell me any order, and I would believe you. Like, Toronto is sixth, and the Wizards are seventh, and the Hornets are eighth. Like, all right, cool. That makes sense. Yeah, so, like, the Bulls, I think, for me, it's just how many new pieces they have to incorporate.
Right.
But, I do think they're a playoff team. I mean, they are, you know, on FanDuel right now, they are favored to make the playoffs. Or minus 194, yes, to make the playoffs. Plus 156, no. So, you know, the betting market agrees right now that the Bulls look like a playoff team. It's just Boston has, in theory, you know, more chemistry between the Jays in particular, and I'm betting on their top end talent. But it would not surprise me at all if I have the order wrong and Chicago is sixth or seventh and Boston is eighth. Like,
and likewise, I wouldn't be shocked if the Celtics finish in the top five. I mean, again, this is where we are. I had to put someone eighth. Like, regardless of who I put eight, I would feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So who do you have seventh?
New York. For the reasons that I stated previously, I could see them also finishing a little bit higher, but not a lot higher, Brian. I do think this team has a ceiling. I really do. And that's not to downplay their upgrades over the summer, because they did get better.
Yeah.
But you know what? The rest of the East did too. And I wonder if their improvements are significantly better than what the rest of the East did. I don't necessarily think so. And also, I'm baking in Walker's knee for one thing, you know, the tips factor as well, which can, you know, deviate quite a lot. And also, and I hate to bring this up because I don't, I wonder if Randall will have the same shot making capabilities this year, because he does take a lot of off ankle shots. And last year, I wonder if, I don't want to say luck. I think that's so unfair. Professional athletes don't get lucky over the course of a 72 game season. But he does take a lot of these fadeaways, leaning shots, and he's great at them. But I wonder if he'll have the same success rate on them. If he does, which I hope, great, good news for New York. If he doesn't, then they will have to rely a little bit more on their defense, which thankfully they're geared towards. But still, I just wonder if they are going to come in and be as good as last year. Also, worth noting, Derrick Rose is going to be 33. He's not a spring chicken anymore. I wonder how much you can rely on that. I have no idea what we're going to get out of Obi Toppin. I hope we'll see what we were hoping to see last year. So again, the pendulum, it swings so very, very much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the nice way to frame the Julius Randle discussion is just regression. Like, maybe he had a career year and he regresses a little bit. I guess I wonder if improvements from RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley in particular offset any of that, plus the additions of Fournier and Kemba, and how, you know, they balance that with the loss of Reggie Bullock. So
I hope so.
I think it is fair, especially the tips factor. It is fair to wonder, you know, do they start to get a little burnt out on him?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, like, Mitchell Robinson missed half of last season. So if he stays healthy and they compare him with Nerlens Noel, like, Obi Toppin is a wild card here still too. They're not going to mess around and start Elfrid Payton, which is going to be nice. Like, you're not wasting 23 minutes on Elfrid Payton anymore. So, yeah, I mean, they're a team as well where it's like, I could see them at 5. I could see them at 10. It's, you know, Kemba, I think, is, you just have no idea how many games you're going to get out of him. But I would, like, I'd be, if I'm a Knicks fan, I'd be happy to get 50.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And you brought up a name that I want to touch on as well. You said RJ Barrett. That's the thing that kept me back a little bit, because I think if RJ is going to, you know, have it, take that leap where he becomes an all-star and like a 22 point scorer and more efficient and all that, which we already saw the beginning of last year when he became a 40% for the 3-point shooter. And he also got a lot better from the line, right? I think he like took a significant leap across the board, if memory serves. But like, if he builds on that even more and becomes, you know, an all-star player, then I think their ceiling rises a little bit more. I think right now there is a set ceiling, but RJ Barrett is the one who could push it.
Yeah. Yeah. He went, as a rookie, he shot 61.4 from the free throw line. Last year, he was at 74.6.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking it up too here. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, 40, shooting 44 across overall. The board. Yeah, yeah. Like, he went from 40.2 to 44.1. He went from 32.0 as a rookie to 40.1 last year from three. So,
and he upped his assist and lowered his turnovers, which is extremely difficult to do at once for a young guy. So, you know what?
Yeah,
that, like, that's a guy I would look for to take a pretty big leap here. That's like, that season two was very underrated. We probably should have spoken more about it. Like, that's,
yeah,
that leads me to think that I could have had them too low. But again, like you said, and we're going to keep reiterating this, anything from like 5 and down is like a crapshoot. You have to put teams in there. I don't feel comfortable putting anyone below 6.
Right. No, I know. I mean, this could be, you know, I think it's going to be similar to what we've seen in the West for a while, where it's like a lot of these teams finish, you know, 46 and 36 or 47 and 35. And it's all like within one game of one another.
Yeah.
So like, us saying that your team is going to be 7th or 8th, like, I still think all of these teams finish above 500.
Right.
You know, I think the East as a conference is stronger than the West right now, which is the first time you can make that argument in more than a decade.
Yeah. One question to you about New York, though, before we move on. Who is their number one guy? I know that the normally everyone would say Julius Randle, which is fine. But as we've seen in the NBA, you kind of need players who can self-create off the dribble consistently. Like, if your best player is a big, at least someone in the traditional power forward role, you're not really going that far unless that player is a do-it-all superstar like Giannis, for example.
Right.
Like, where do the Knicks go from here? Do they hope that RJ Barrett turns into that number one clear-cut superstar? Or do you just kind of work the margins and say, okay, maybe we have two or three players who are on a similar tier, and then we kind of hope that's enough, even though none of them are really in like the top 10, top 15, top 20, maybe even?
Yeah, I mean, I think Barrett would be the hope that he develops into that. I think Kemba and Randle are going to be the guys right now. But having, I mean, going back to your point on Barrett and like, do we see a breakout from him? Having Kemba, having Fournier, having Randle is going to, you know, take defensive attention away from him. So maybe he doesn't wind up with the best wing defender on him. Like, maybe they have, they feel they have to cover Fournier, they have to cover Kemba. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see him have that kind of a breakout career year. And yeah, I think he has that kind of upside based on the improvements that we saw from year one to year two. So, you know, who's their best player at the start of the year and who's their best player at the end of the year? I might have two very different answers.
Right. And that's fair. What I'm wondering is if they have that future superstar on the roster that is necessary to win a championship.
Well, that's why they're going to get Dame in 2 months.
Oh, man. You know what? It could be fun. Like, could you imagine the East if Dame joins?
Yeah, it'd be wild.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So who do you have as your sixth seed in the East?
So I have Chicago as my sixth seed. And again, this is one of those things where I could see a scenario where they sneak into the top four. Mm-hmm. I could also see a scenario where they don't, where they drop backwards and are eighth, just like you had them. But I think six is kind of that sweet spot for them. So Zach LaVine to me is more of a ceiling racer than, for example, Julius Randle. I think that's fair to say, just because he's that good of a scorer. And now that he's gotten playmakers around him, it's just a different game. We've seen it preseason. Like, he has had to work a lot less for his points. In the game against Memphis, and again, I realize it's preseason, but you can take some things away from it, which is he was just able to play so much more off the ball and pick and choose his spots. And we've also seen him do a couple post-ups in the preseason, which is really interesting. Like, there is a really advanced game there. And now that he has all those players alongside him, whereas before he was playing with Chris Dunn, Ryan Arcidiacono, Cristiano Felicio, Chandler Hutchinson. And by the way, side note, Brian, maybe you can explain this to me, because you know how there are a lot of skeptics around the Bulls, right, this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Chandler Hutchinson, who was a rotation player, is on a two-way deal in Phoenix. Ryan Arcidiacono is out of the league. Chris Dunn right now is out of the league. Cristiano Felicio out of the league. Like, where exactly are the Bulls supposed to be? Why are they supposed to be the same team as when they had players who are now out of the league and are replaced with Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, and Nikola Vucevic? How does those two things align? Help me.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think the Bulls' skepticism is being overrated this year.
Right, but I don't get that. I don't get, like, how so many people are saying that, oh, I expect the Bulls to have finished with 37, 38 wins when the roster has dramatically improved to that extent. Again, not saying they're a championship contender. I don't think they are. I don't even think that's the focus on that team. But they got better. And while they don't have, like, the well-oiled machineness of a Phoenix, of a Utah, for example, or a Milwaukee, the quality level here is just so much higher. Like, Alex Caruso has been phenomenal so far. He's going to play a pivotal role moving forward. And Coby White hasn't even played yet. He's still on the roster. Patrick Williams has played one game, and no one really seemed to pay any attention to him. So when he gets back into the swing of things, he's going to basically benefit from all of that. I don't know, Brian. I could just see this team becoming a lot better than what people think, and I wouldn't be shocked if they are better than sixth.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't either. Especially, I mean, we'll get to it in a second, but, like, given the uncertainty with a couple of the top teams in the East, like, yeah, there's definitely a world where they finish fifth or fourth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Miami, with the depth concerns that we have about them, like, if one of their big guys gets hurt,
yeah,
Jimmy or Bam gets hurt, like, why couldn't Chicago finish higher than Miami?
Right. Right. And Chicago, by the way, when we talk about their depth as well, I mean, yeah, they have a lot of pieces. I mean, comes in. I mean, I'm part of a DM Bulls group, and we kind of had fun with this because last night the Bulls waived Stanley Johnson. Mm-hmm. Remember all the names that I just listed that are no longer in the NBA?
Yeah.
Do you think 2 years ago the Bulls would have waived Stanley Johnson?
Or would Stanley Johnson would be starting for them.
He would be starting for him. And now they waived him because, no, we have so many good players instead. Like, yeah. Alize Johnson played his ass off and is going to keep playing his ass off because he's good. By the way, I still don't understand why the Nets chose to prefer LaMarcus Aldridge over Alize Johnson. I really don't. Like, you need a rebounder and a guy who hustles and do all the dirty work. Who do they have? That Paul Millsap, who's 87?
Bruce Brown.
As a big, though. I don't get that.
They play him as a big.
Right. But they don't. I don't know. I feel as though the Nets should have kept Alize Johnson.
Yeah. Okay. Now we get to the fun part. So you sent me two seedings. Ben Simmons plays for the Sixers, and if he doesn't play for the Sixers, which, again, we don't know what the plan is as of yet. So If Ben plays for the Sixers, who is your five seed?
If he plays for the Sixers, they're fifth.
And if he doesn't, who is your five seed?
Then it's Atlanta.
So you have the Sixers lower if Ben Simmons does play for them than
if he doesn't. Yes, I do. And that's not because he's a bad player. This is not Ben hate. This isn't that. It is because I think no one on that team trusts him moving forward. I think he broke all sort of trusts with his whole shenanigan here. And I think that the combination of that and also not playing someone who can't shoot is enough for the Sixers to actually just go ham without him. I think they could be so good without having to kind of cater to Ben the way that they've done for years and years and years. And just the distraction alone, having that removed, could put them up on third. Having Ben around, while you know that the future is kind of written, that he's not going to stay there, that he is going to move on. And while he's there, you're still going to limit yourself in terms of shooting. I just don't think it works out. I think that's one of those situations where Joe is out, Seth is out. Like, people are just basically saying, you know what, Ben? You kind of left us high and dry. You didn't even want us to come out and meet you. And now you're here banking on the door of the training facility because you want to come in. Like, what the hell? We're just not interested. We're out on you. So I think he is going to be a net negative for them, despite being a fantastic basketball player. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying Ben Simmons is bad. I'm not saying that overall his influence is usually bad. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this particular season, based on these specific surroundings or circumstances, it is just the perfect storm that's brewing.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, I have them fifth in large part because of the uncertainty, because we don't know if he's going to play or when he's going to play or what he's going to look like if he plays. Like, do we get last year's version of Houston's James Harden, where he's just clearly going through the motions and does not give a damn? And if that's the case, does Doc bench him? Like, I don't think he will, but – you know, how long can they live with that before they end up pulling the trigger on a trade? Are they willing to wait him out months if he doesn't play or if he's lollygagging? So I just don't think, unless you know that Ben Simmons is playing this year and giving it his all, which I don't think will be the case, even if he does play, I don't think you can have them third in the East or fourth in the East. Like,
agreed.
You know, it's just, I'm with you. Like, you know, some of the comments coming out from like Danny Green and Seth Curry last week were basically like, we don't know where his head's at, but like, we just need him to come in and do his job. And we're not asking him to shoot jumpers. Just like, do what you did last year. Like, we're, yeah. if that's what you want to do, that's fine. Just like, don't, you know, don't clearly mail it in. But, you know, all the comments from his camp that were leaked to reporters, like leading up to training camp, were, he's done with the team. He's never going to play a game with the team again. You know,
right.
Shams had, like, if he does come back, he's clearly going to be mentally checked out. So I think it is very fair to wonder, you know, like, at some point we'll be able to talk about the Sixers as an actual basketball team again.
Yeah.
This is not that time.
So, you know how the Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley for Ben trade has floated around for a long for a long time?
Yeah.
No, I realize that it's not greatly attractive to Philly simply because you don't get a playmaker in return.
And why? But, they don't need Marvin Bagley.
Right. So maybe you spin off Marvin Bagley to something else. But I mean, I am at that point, if I'm the Sixers, where I'm just like, considering it more than I did 2 months ago, just because I want resolution. But I agree it's not gonna happen. But I'm saying I'm at that point now where I want that resolution. If I'm outside the Philly organization, I'm just looking in, I'm saying I want a resolution.
Yeah, I think even people inside the organization want a resolution, but like, I think Morey has more patience than literally anyone else in this situation. Like, the fans are over it. Doc Rivers is over it. The players, I'm sure, are over it. But Daryl's just not going to cave, I don't think. So he's willing to live with this awkwardness. And again, we'll see what this does to their chemistry at the start of the season. Like, if he plays, if he doesn't play, I don't know. I'm done talking about him. He can... We'll see what happens on Wednesday before we have any really spicy Sixers takes. But I mean, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they finish out, you know, in the play-in tournament, honestly.
Right. Like, can we then talk about the Sixers without Ben Simmons?
Yeah, please.
Okay, because I have them three without, and that's not even taking into account what you're getting back. I actually put the placeholder of Hield and Bagley into my mind when I put them three.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
So that means that if they get more out of a Ben Simmons trade, hell, I'm not saying they could crack the top two, but then I would feel better about them cementing number three, if you catch my drift. Because here's the thing. Joel Embiid, in my opinion, is going to be the MVP this year. And I think it necessitates him having shooting around him.
Yeah.
And not having Ben is just necessary in that regard. And I don't want to go through everything what Ben Simmons offers you defensively. I don't care. Like, because you still have the last line of defense in Joel Embiid, who is one of the best defenders in the entire NBA. Like, you'll manage. Will you have a top 10 defense? Maybe not, but screw it. I don't care. If you have more shooting, the Sixers will finally be able to just outscore people on the regular, because you would have so much space for Embiid to operate. If you go down there and double him, he's a good enough passer to kick it out for shooters. Like, imagine if it's Buddy Hield on one side and you have Seth Curry on the other side of the court. Like, the spacing is going to be ridiculous. And then you add a Tobias Harris into the equation who can score both on outside and inside. Yeah, I think that is the team to fear. Like, if you have that level of team where the offense just flows and it's shooting and it's Embiid establishing himself on the inside, they could challenge the best of them in the playoffs as well. Like, then you become a legitimate title contender, which you've been searching for the past 3 years, and it hasn't really come to fruition. I think that's the play. Just build around Embiid to a higher regard, but do it now, because we don't know how he's going to be in 2 years. We don't know if his body can hold up. Like, this is the year to maximize everything around Joel.
Oh, no. I completely agree. I have questions about the viability of Tyrese Maxey and Shake Milton as your top two ball handlers. Like, I love both guys. I just don't think they are. I mean, I think Tyrese is going to go through a lot of growing pains this year. Like, I'm high on him, and long term especially, but I have concerns about what the offense is going to look like if Ben doesn't play. But you're right. I mean, they have been firing up a higher volume of threes. They've been talking like Seth in particular needs to just almost double his three-point rate compared to last year. So
triple them for all I care. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll like I do think their offense could it will look different if Ben doesn't play. It could be better.
Could be better offensively.
I mean,
could.
They with Ben and Joe on the floor together, it's usually still pretty good. It's the problem is like when Ben and Dwight played together, or with you know this year Ben plays like when.
Well,
Ben
I mean, it was good because like defensively they were great. I mean that always helps your net rating if you're great defensively. But I mean, offensive. Come on, even with Ben and Joe, it was so obvious that the spacing issues were apparent. I mean, they definitely affected him. Yeah. If you're building around Joel Embiid, you're not going to be a high-paced team anyway. You're going to be primarily in the half court.
I mean, that's where Ben was. I mean, that's a large reason why he's better in the regular season than the playoffs. Like, he is really good in transition. Like, he can, you know, he's good at finding open shooters in transition in particular, and I don't think I would be surprised if Maxey and Milton will be as good in that regard.
Agreed.
And that, you know, teams get out and transition more in the regular season because the other teams aren't playing defense as hard.
But you're playing, regardless of who you are as a team, you're still playing more half court than you are playing transition. So that, and again, I wouldn't sleep on Tyrese Maxey as a transition player.
No, I think he'll look for a shot more than he'll look for a pass, though.
That's true. But you know what? I'm okay with that because teams are so used to when they were playing the Sixers that, oh, here we have a 6'11 player coming down on us. And you know what? He's not going to shoot.
Right.
Like he's going to dish it to the corner. Then suddenly having Tyrese Maxey coming down and going, you know what? I'm going to bang on your head. Like, oh, what is that? What is going on? So I don't know. I am out on pairing Ben Simmons with a dominant big. That's not just Embiid. I don't think Ben Simmons should ever be paired with a dominant big. I don't think it'll work.
That's fair. I mean, so far the results have not been great in the playoffs, at least.
Right.
All right, so we have, if Simmons plays for the Sixers, we have the same top four in slightly different order. You know, so you have Miami 3, Atlanta 4. I have Atlanta 3, Miami 4. Why'd you go Miami over Atlanta? You have Miami over Atlanta regardless.
Right, right. If either of Ben plays or if he doesn't,
Right.
I have Miami over because I need to see a little bit more out of Atlanta. I love the Hawks. I mean, again, on our league pass rankings, along with Dan and Adam, they ranked number one total. And I can't hate on that. They are extremely entertaining. I think offensively they have so much upside. It's ridiculous. But I do wonder if we're crowning them just a tad too quickly after their great run last season. Like, it seemed that the expectation now is, oh yeah, they're going to come back to the Eastern Conference Finals. They might even make the finals. Like, I'm just a little bit skeptical of that. I do think that Miami is a little bit more geared towards being a legitimate contender in that regard because Kyle Lowry is going to unlock so much of their components. That said, this is where injuries kind of play a big factor because there's no doubting that Atlanta has better depth than Miami. So if Miami like misses Jimmy Butler for 2 weeks and then Kyle Lowry for a week and whatever, then Atlanta and their depth can come in and just swoop over that position fairly easily because they can just keep putting guys into the rotation. Oh, John Collins goes down? No matter. We have DeAndre Hunter. Oh, Clint Capela goes down? Hey, Onyeka Okongwu, come on down. Like, you're a starter now. It doesn't matter. You just keep having players. Like, Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter goes down. Cameron Reddish. Like, it doesn't matter. You have all these components. You can't say that about the Heat. If guys goes down, like it's not game over, but it's gonna hurt them.
Yeah, I mean it's game over for a top three seed.
It very well could be. So I'm and I'm trying to be positive when I do these kind of things.
Right.
That's why I think, you know, that they're going to stay healthy. It's another thing when you have an already injured player. Like, for example, I'm not optimistic when it comes to the Clippers because we don't know anything about Kawhi's situation. We've been giving no info on that, and it sounds, and whenever ACL is implied, it's pretty harsh. But I'm deciding to remain optimistic about Miami, but I am fully recognizing that if they have just a little bit bad injury luck, Atlanta is right there.
Yeah, and that's why I put Atlanta 3 over Miami. Yeah. It was just the depth of Atlanta. Like, I agree with you on paper with their, like, top 7. Right. Miami has more championship equity if all of those guys are healthy than Atlanta. But I can't bank on all of those guys staying healthy throughout the entire season, especially given the age of Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler.
Right.
I think Atlanta finishes with a better regular season record, but it wouldn't surprise me to – I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see either of these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, if I'm being honest.
I agree. And it's also – like, I'm looking at this comparison in a way that I think Jimmy is the best player on both those teams.
Yeah.
With Trey handedly being second.
Yeah, yeah.
And then from there, it's like Miami players. Like, it's Kyle and it's Bam.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty top heavy, but that top heaviness is also damn good.
Miami definitely has 3 of the top 4, but then how far down after that?
Right. Atlanta has the next 7 or something. Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Duncan Robinson's in there somewhere, but like
right, and Tyler Hero, depending on his
yeah, and he's looked good in the preseason.
He has
like the third year breakout maybe imminent, but yeah, I think like you could probably make a case for Atlanta after that to have at least the next 3 or 4 best players, like Capella, Collins, Bogdan Bogdanovic is in there, Herter.
It's a good litmus test to star equity compared to depth.
Yeah, it will be. And then you and I both have Milwaukee, Brooklyn 1-2 in that order.
Yeah.
If not for all of this nonsense, if Kyrie was eligible to play all 82 games.
Still Milwaukee.
Really? Okay. I would have put Brooklyn over Milwaukee.
Yeah, I know you would. I know. I don't care. I still think Milwaukee could be number one. I don't think it matters. I think overall, it's more about the Eastern Conference Finals in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're better. I think the Milwaukee Bucks are better, and I think, you know, them winning the first one and getting that monkey off their back,
that's
huge. And I think they're tired of hearing them being ruled out because, oh, Brooklyn. I think Milwaukee is going to completely steamroll teams in the playoffs. If that means that they're going to come into the regular season and kind of do like last year where they're going to test something out and not play their primary guys more than 28, 29 minutes. Okay, then I could see them finishing second, maybe even third. Hell, because then maybe they completely punt on the regular season and go, doesn't matter.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Like, we can take all the criticism in the regular season. We'll just ignore when Stephen A. Smith goes on ESPN and says, why is Milwaukee first? And then when it comes to the playoffs, they go Jordan on everybody's ass.
Yeah. But I mean, hell, we've kind of seen that the last 2 years, and it didn't really – I mean, last year they really did.
You know, yeah, with the more so last year.
But like the previous 2 years – you know, Giannis was the only player to play 30 minutes per game.
Yeah.
And they still finished with the best record in the NBA, right? It wasn't just the East.
Yeah, best record in the NBA. Yeah.
And then the previous year as well, Giannis played 32.8, Chris Middleton 31.1. Those were the only two guys over 30. So it's like they don't necessarily need to play their top guys that many minutes. I mean, last year, Giannis, Chris, and Drew all played at least 32. So they did give slightly more minutes to their three main guys. But as you said, you know, it's similar to with Phoenix, Chris Paul and Devin Booker figured each other out. Like, Drew Holiday is now well integrated into the system. I would say the Bucks got deeper as well this offseason, adding George Hill, adding Rodney Hood, adding Semi Ojeleye, getting Dante DiVincenzo back.
Yeah.
Grayson Allen, yeah. And then, you know, Bobby Portis, like, talk about a irrational confidence guy. Like, Bobby Portis coming off of how important he was
right
in the finals, like, he's going to come out just a totally different player this year, I think. You know, I think, again, if Kyrie were able to play all 82 games, I would bet on the Nets to finish first. But as of right now, Kyrie is not playing any games. And we don't know when that's going to change, whether he gets vaccinated, whether the Nets change their mind, especially if one of KD or Harden go down. Or, I mean, I think what the Nets long-term are hoping for is New York to lift this policy and not require guys to get vaccinated to play in home games. If that's the case, and if that happens in the next month or two, it's very different than if it doesn't, you know, if it happens in March or April or doesn't happen at all.
Right. Here's the thing, though. Even if they were fully available, I just could still see this team combust a little bit, because if it's not let's just be honest. If it's not the vaccine, it's something else with Kyrie. And if it's not something else, it's something third or fourth or fifth. Something always tends to creep up.
Yeah.
And become a distraction. I don't trust that. Look at the Bucks last year. Where was the where were the distractions there?
I mean, right. I guess if you're like, there weren't any to this extent. You could say, like,
would Budenholzer get fired if that probably the biggest.
And, like, why are they not the number one seed? Are they, like, you know, does Giannis regret signing? But, like, yeah, I mean, the big distraction would have been if Giannis hadn't signed the Supermax, but he did right before the season and removed all of that.
And I'm just thinking that, honestly, when you look at at least the champions of the past few years, also the Raptors, right? That wasn't a controversial team. Like, yeah, sure, they didn't know whether Kawhi was going to re-sign or not, but it didn't matter. They were all in on the moment and trying to prove something. I just think distractions can be, especially in that regard, and especially the level of distractions that Kyrie seemed to find himself in all the time, is just such a difficult obstacle for teams that truly aspire to win a championship.
Mm-hmm. It's a fair point. All right, so let's get into our conference finals and finals predictions. We're pretty much in unison here.
Yes.
Let's start with the West.
Utah or Phoenix?
No Lakers in the Western Conference Finals.
Nope, for neither of us.
Yeah, no, I also had Utah versus Phoenix. I was just razzing you. Is it just, I mean, like, what? Why are you skeptical of the Lakers in the playoffs? Assuming we talked regular season, if DeAndre Jordan's starting, whatever. Like, let's assume in the playoffs we have AD at the five, LeBron at the four. We have two shooters. Like, Ariza's healthy. Talen Horton-Tucker is healthy. You know, what? Like, why don't you think they're beating one of Utah or Phoenix in the conference semis?
Well, I'm not ruling it out. I could be wrong. I mean, they could find themselves in that spot. I just think it's more likely that they don't, because I think higher of Phoenix and Utah in terms of their cohesiveness and their depth and their execution and their coaching. And, you know, again, here's the thing. It's sort of a double-edged sword with the Lakers. I think, like, they always have so much media attention. So that also means that things that are very normal to happen for NBA teams, like if two guys in practice have, like, a disagreement and they yell at each other, like, that happens all the time at any NBA team. But if it happens with the Lakers and the media picks up on it, it's going to be a 48-hour news cycle at the very least, and then somehow, some way, someone on ESPN will find a way to stretch that into a week.
And
I think that can be an issue, especially as they're coming together as a unit, because someone is going to have to sacrifice here, or more people are going to sacrifice if this is going to work. And Westbrook is one of those people who draws a lot of headlines. He is a ball dominant guy. So is LeBron. So if you have an on-court moment where those two guys don't really connect and it seems like, something is off here, people are going to run with it, even if it were something that is forgotten 5 minutes later or should have been forgotten 5 minutes later. Mm-hmm. So I just think the Lakers could be a sacrifice of their own immense power and their own weight in that regard.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like I mean, I also didn't have them in my Western Conference Finals. I'm just so skeptical. I hate to keep going back to it, but like, I just don't understand the Russ fit with LeBron and AD. And I hope it works out, because it would really bum me out for this to be such a high profile failure, because it's going to lead on, you know, a lot of scapegoating of Russ in particular. I just don't see a case if he's
the reason it doesn't work.
I know. Yeah. It's a fair, especially like LeBron and AD prove that they can work together. So, you know,
then why worried about him being a scapegoat though? That I'm curious.
Well, just cause you know, the narrative around him ever since like the late OKC days has just been like, all he cares about is triple doubles. He's not actually a winning player. And like, I think he can be, it's just he's like somewhat similar to Ben. Like his strengths and weaknesses are so pronounced that, I mean, you could just see, like, it's just so obvious that his crappy shot selection and his propensity for turning the ball over, like driving into the lane with no plan of what to do when he gets there. You know, it really, like, if he could just cut that stuff out of his game, he would be so much better. And he's just like so frustrating, because you just have to take these warts with everything that he does well. But how that fits with LeBron and AD in particular, no, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they end up in the Western Conference Finals or even in the finals. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, you bet on top end talent, and more often than not, you know, that's what wins out in the playoffs. But no, Phoenix just proved last year that they are not, like, this is not the same old Suns team. They beat the, I know AD was hurt, but you know, even with him healthy, like they took the first game off of the Lakers. They won game one of that series. And then Utah, like, I know the focus is so much on, you know, how they choked against the Clippers, but like Mike Conley didn't play in that series. He played one game, because he probably rushed back from an injury. It was terrible. Like, if they're healthy, I think this is the year where we could see, mm-hmm. like, this is the NBA's absolute nightmare series. Like, if the Lakers and the Warriors are not involved and it's really Utah versus Phoenix, like, no casual fans will care about this. But I think they're the two best teams in the West. So that's why I put them in there.
Yeah. I don't know, Brian. I think if the Lakers don't work out, and you can kind of track it back to Westbrook just not being a good fit, and if he keeps focusing on triple-doubles, because he did focus on triple-doubles. Like, let's sure. not try to say that he didn't. There's a reason he's had four years, right, of averaging triple-doubles. Which is ridiculous, by the way. I mean, it's not to take anything away from the man's capability of producing stats and producing, like, just numbers. Like, he's astronomically good at doing that. Mm-hmm. It's just he can't seem to weave himself into a good team and play the role that's necessary for him to play. Like, he's not going to be a spot-up shooter. He's not going to be a guy who's going to stand in the corner and wait for everything else to materialize. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's scapegoating if he just doesn't fit in. Then it's just, Russ is playing a very destructive brand of basketball that undermines the championship equity of the Lakers.
Yeah. He is not on my fantasy team, by the way. Okay. Luka is, and Russ is not. Because it was just like, the turnovers and the field goal, the shot selection, that just killer in both real life and fantasy.
You know where Russ would be fun, by the way? The Spurs. He'll be the clear-cut number one. No, but he'll be the clear-cut number one guy.
Yeah.
And he'd have players around him as opposed to him right now having to be the player around LeBron.
I guess the question is, do you want
You don't want it, but it would be fun. I am exclusively talking about the funness of it. No, it'd be bad. Like Deonte Murray would ask for a trade, like if it's
right. The season. Yeah, Rich Paul would make him hold out next for sure. All right, Eastern Conference Finals. Who do you have?
Milwaukee over Brooklyn. For once, I actually have a little bit more Brooklyn love than you do.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is very much in hot take territory, by the way. but I actually went Milwaukee over Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's all the Kyrie stuff. If you're telling me Kyrie is vaccinated by February or the New York thing is lifted by February before the trade deadline and they know they're going to have him for the playoffs, I'll put Brooklyn in there. But if you're telling me that he's not vaccinated in May and the restriction is still in place and he is not playing in the playoffs, they didn't trade him. So they just have Kyrie Irving taking up that roster spot. They don't have anything to show for it. I'm very, very bullish on this Atlanta team. I think they're young enough that you can reasonably project improvement for a lot of these guys. We didn't really see, I mean, this is the scary thing about this Hawks team. We didn't even see them at full strength when they went on this run.
That's true.
Like DeAndre Hunter, who had an incredible start to his sophomore season, you know, played 20 regular season games, 23, and then, you know, played only 5 in the playoffs. And then, so he played the whole Knicks series and then he got hurt and didn't play against Philly or Milwaukee. Cam Reddish also came back late in the playoffs, played pretty well. I mean, there were a couple games in particular where he looked really good. But he missed all but 4 games. Yeah, he came back in the Bucks series. And yeah, I mean, like 21 points on 7 of 12 shooting in that game 6 loss. So add those two guys to the mix. You know, the question is, does Trey lose his superpowers because of these NBA rule changes? I'm not going to go that far.
Agreed.
John Collins now not having to play for a contract. Is he, you know, more comfortable in his role, and does he figure out ways to fit into that hierarchy? Like, still have Bogdan Bogdanovic, Danilo Gallinari, DeLon Wright, I think is going to be a low-key, very good addition to this team because their offense still kind of went to die whenever Trey left the floor. So now you've got another stabilizer in Wright. You still have Lou Williams as well. You know, you have Okongwu will come back. He showed promising flashes in the playoff. You have Gorgui Dieng in the meantime. Like, I don't know. I very well might be too high on this Hawks team, but I think they are legit. And, you know, the question, I guess, is if it's Atlanta, Brooklyn in the second round, are you really betting against Kevin Durant? But given the number of bodies that they can throw at him, and that they can throw at James Harden, like, you know, this is again where if they had Kyrie and Kyrie could, like, ISO on Trey every possession, then I'd be much more nervous. But if they don't, you know, so it all comes down to Kyrie. Like, much like you have the Sixers, if Ben Simmons doesn't play seeding, this is, if the Nets have Kyrie, if the Nets have Kyrie, I put them in the finals. If they don't, I could see a world wherein they don't even make the conference finals.
Yeah, I still disagree with your Kyrie optimism, but it's fair.
Yeah. And then finals, who you got?
Milwaukee over Utah, which is also coincidentally a series that the NBA would be dreading.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, that is what I have as well. And yes, the NBA will just absolutely melt if that's the, I mean, Milwaukee Phoenix is bad enough for them. But yeah, this is not a ratings draw for the NBA.
But you know what, though? That said, last year should give them some level of optimism because that, or last season, because it happened just a couple of months ago, but Milwaukee Phoenix was fun. Like, that super was fun. It was a tremendous series, and I would expect nothing less from a Milwaukee Utah series.
And I think the ratings were actually better than you would expect given the two teams that were involved?
Oh, I don't know. We have to consult with Ethan Strauss beforehand.
Right. Yeah. Maybe they juiced the ratings somehow. Regardless, we shouldn't care. No one should care. The only people who should care are the NBA and television executives. No casual fans should care about this thing. It doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, it would be a super fun series. I think the good thing going into this year is that you can reasonably talk yourself into at least like four or five teams in each conference that I could see making the finals, health permitting.
Well,
you can talk yourself into any of the top five in the East.
It was the West I was thinking about, but like, you're right. I mean, it's Utah, it's Phoenix, it's the Lakers, and it's Warriors. Denver. No, it was Warriors and Denver. I agree. It was actually five because I was like, who's that last team? But you're right. Like, Golden State and Denver are in there too.
If Clay is old Clay, which is a big if, but he's back to his old form, and like Jamal Murray comes back in January and his guns blazing, like that. I mean, that Nuggets team is probably the best dark horse bet. Let me see what their odds are right now. Plus 20. Oh, okay. Plus 2,500. It's not as juicy as you would have liked, but I mean, like in the eight games or whatever after the Aaron Gordon trade, before Jamal Murray went down, that team looked legit. Yeah. If Michael Porter Jr. has the breakout that we expect, if Jokic builds on the MVP year, yeah, absolutely could see Denver crashing the party here. So we are excited.
The Clippers, man. I mean, and that's crazy. I have them outside the playoffs picture because I'm presuming that Kawhi isn't playing. But let's say that Paul George keeps them their head above water for half a year, Kawhi returns and then spends the remaining half of the year getting reacclimated into the fabric of the team, boom, they could be a finals candidate too, which is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're excited to see how wrong these predictions end up being.
yeah.
But no, it should be a fun season. We're looking forward to it. God willing, we won't have to talk about Kyrie Irving or Ben Simmons very much longer.
Right.
But yeah, stick with us. We will have plenty of content coming out once the season begins, and enjoy Tip Off Tuesday, y'all. It's going to be a fun ride.
And before we leave, Brian, one important note.
Yes.
I've been wanting to talk about this for a while, and it's something we should dedicate an entire episode to, but I just wanted to say, because we're so close to tip off for the regular season, the NBA right now has never been better. The season that we're going into right now, I mean, for all of us who are writing about the league, covering the league, we are all extremely excited. This could be one of the best seasons in NBA history that we actually go into. So if you're out there and you like basketball, because if you're listening to this podcast, I presume you like basketball.
Yeah.
Go talk to a friend. Like, go tell your friend who might be on the bubble of like, should I follow basketball and whatnot? Like, this is the year. Tell your buddies, this is the year. Go out and buy like a collective league pass package or something. Like, expand the NBA basketball interest worldwide, because this is the year to go all in. It's going to be insanely good.
And on that note, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.